Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
The Sports Virus Podcast.
Welcome to the Sports Virus Podcast, everybody. I'm Joe Castellano, along with Ray Woodson, and we are brought to you, as always, by Kane's Tire in San Rafael, California, where they've had the lowest prices in Marin County for over 60 years. And we're brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco, offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play. And Ray, I think this is the second podcast in a row that we're doing while the Giants are playing. They're playing in Boston at Fenway Park. Looks like a beautiful day. And you got Kyle Harrison on the mound. He's been really good lately. The Giants, they need a win after losing the first two games of that series in Boston.
Yeah, you know, they're just kind of scuffling, right? And I hate to put it on one player, but you look at the signing of Blake Snell and what so far it's been a disaster.
Yeah.
Right? In the Snell starts, or, you know, in his starts, or the starts where they've tried to plug in for him now that he's hurt, they're 0-5, and the run differential is minus 43.
Yikes.
You know? Yeah. So if you want to know why they're under 500, that's one big reason. And if Snell were Snell, if he was the guy we saw last year, it'd be a much different story. But it isn't. And so they've got to work their way around that while also trying to work with these young pitchers who have been pretty good. The other four have been pretty good. In fact, I did a little breakdown as I actually did homework, which I hate doing. But and some people say, yeah, Ray, we know. We can tell. But you look at the four starters, Webb, Hicks, Wynn, and Harrison, okay? They're pretty good. 143 innings. An ERA right around 3, 10 home runs allowed, 125 hits in those 143 innings, 40 walks, and 128 strikeouts. That's awfully good. That's all-star level.
Yeah.
And then you look at the other starts, and you look at the up-and-down bullpen, and you can see where the problem was, as well as the inconsistent offense, obviously. But since we're starting to talk about these pitchers, and I start off talking about Blake Snell. If Snell can come back, and, you know, maybe in a couple weeks, we'll see. And you know, these other young pitchers can hold up, with Webb being the ace. Webb had a rough outing his last time out, but otherwise he's been pretty good. You know, they've got something. They may have to call up a Mason Black for a couple of starts. We'll see about that. I guess they called up Randy Rodriguez for some bullpen help.
Yes.
See how he does.
Yeah.
And down the road, you got Tristan Beck. You've got Robbie Ray. Who knows about Alex Cobb? There, you know, there's some potential there. There's no doubt about it. The problem is, don't dig yourself a big enough hole that you can't climb out of.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, too, because the pitchers that really have impressed so far are kind of surprises. I mean, you think about Keaton Wynn. I don't know that people thought he was going to be this good. I love that splitter that he throws.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and Jordan Hicks, people were thinking, oh, well, can he really be a starter? The guy throws 100 miles an hour. Well, he's also been able to really harness his stuff as a starter. I think he's taken something a little bit off of his fastball so that he's throwing more strikes. And, I mean, the guy has an ERA of 1.5. So, I mean, that gives you hope when you hear, you know, you hear about two pitchers like that that have really done well.
And we haven't even mentioned their top prospect, Kyle Harrison. So
yeah, on the mound today. Yeah, he's really, he's got a lot of potential for sure.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the question is, can these guys do it over 160, 180 innings? And maybe you don't want to push it that far. And that's where guys like Cobb and Ray and Black come in later in the season, and also Tristan Beck, who looked pretty impressive at times last year and in spring training. Then he got hurt. So, yeah, you've got some depth there eventually, and then maybe Snell comes back and is the guy, and I think they rushed him, and I think there was pressure to rush him because he was late signing, and, you know, he's $30 million. You want to see what he can do, knowing that, you know, he was going to come out of the gate late anyway. And so I think that there's a lot of blame to go around for that. So, you know, eventually, maybe in June, he'll start being that guy. But what you hope for is that there's this mosh pit of teams beating up on each other for that second or third wild card spot. And I think right now the Giants are two games out of the wild card spot. So they haven't looked great at all. Their slogan so far is Giants baseball. Hey, we're not the Rockies.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you just want to hang in there early. Look, the Nationals won the World Series, I think, 5 years ago when they were hovering around 500 early and then turned it on later. So, yeah, you know, that can happen.
It's hard to judge this team right now because it's really not the team that you would hope to see. But that does happen sometimes in baseball. And pitchers, man, I mean, you don't know. That's why you have to have depth, because guys get hurt. And we got some pitchers here who haven't been stretched out outside of Webb over a long major league season. And in Hicks' case, he's been a reliever, so you got to be extra careful about him. So you can't be guaranteed that those levels of performance, the numbers I mentioned for those four starters, that that's going to continue. But there's definitely potential there. You know, the problem is not playing yourself out of contention and getting some production out of this offense, which has been really frustrating, you know, to the point where Jorge Soler snapped a bat over his leg, you know. And I don't blame him. When you hit three balls over 100 miles an hour and you're 0 for 3 as a result, I can totally understand that. I'm going to run this back to a personal anecdote. When my son was playing in Palomino League baseball, which is Pony League for 17 and 18-year-olds, they had a tournament up in Sacramento, and there were some scouts there. And he hit four snot rockets, okay, four gappers. And the center fielder or right fielder made great catches, in two cases, diving catches, on four absolute missiles. And he's 0 for 4. And I gave him credit. He walks back to the dugout, and he's laughing after the fourth one. He says, what can you do, right?
That's baseball.
hopefully the scouts noticed that, you know, that the balls were hit hard, and, you know, the outfielders just made great plays. Well, so Laird did that yesterday and had nothing to show for it. And he's had incredible frustration in the clutch. But the fundamentals, the other numbers, indicate that he's bound for a turnaround there, but it hasn't happened yet. And this offense just can't gain traction right now. And it seems like the same old story every year with the Giants, right? Pretty good pitching, although overall they don't rank well in the major leagues this year. You see signs of some pretty good arms there that can maybe take them a long way. But then the offense holds them down. And, you know, I am frustration for Giants fans since Barry Bonds left, right? They haven't had a 30-home run guy since Bonds left. It's crazy, you know, but that's been the story of this team. Offensive frustration, sometimes being just good enough, and you hope the pitching is going to be good, and the pitching better be good for them to be in contention. That's just been the formula.
I can't watch somebody break a bat over their knee and not think about Bo Jackson, because that was the best one ever. And by the way, speaking of home runs, little live update here on the podcast. Mike Yastrzemski just went deep at Fenway Park, hitting one over the right field wall. And his grandfather, Carl Yastrzemski, the Hall of Famer, the Triple Crown winner in 1967, he's at the game, or at least he was at the game beforehand. They didn't show a shot of him when the home run was hit. They showed other family members, so I don't know if he's still there, but apparently, you know, he was there earlier today and introduced himself to Bob Melvin, who had never met him before, which was pretty cool.
Wow.
And now Yaz, the young Yaz, goes deep at Fenway. I don't know if he did that before. I don't think so. We'll find out. Did he? Okay, well, that's really cool, though. That is really cool.
Well, I seem to recall, and people can check me on this, but when he first came to the Giants, They went to Fenway.
They did. Did he hit a home run? I don't remember.
And he went yard. I think the first game he went yard. I mean, how fitting is that? So he's done it again. And, I mean, no matter what, the name Yastrzemski is magic in Boston. There's no doubt about that. I know the name is not magic in San Francisco with some fans who've been calling it DFA. And I've been one of the guys who's been hanging on for dear life for this guy, because I think he still does some good things. And by the way, he's been hitting pretty well the last couple of weeks, and he plays good defense. And there's one clip, I think it was in the Pirates game over the weekend, and he made a play on a ball that was hit into the corner that a lot of right fielders don't make. First of all, getting to the ball before it hits the wall, and second of all, one hop throw to second base to hold a guy to a single. So, you know, there's the athleticism is still there too. He's a guy who can help you as far as outfield depth. He's not the greatest thing since the real Yaz, but he's still, he's still some help. And now the hitting's starting to come around. Should he have a huge role on this team as an everyday player? Maybe not, but I think he's still some outfield depth. And he's still some help. So that's a great story. And I go back to, it really brings me back to when I really started becoming a baseball fan when I was 10 or 11 years old. The first real inkling I got of baseball was when they had the 1965 World Series, and I was going to school in Los Angeles, and they rolled the TV set in to watch Game 7, okay, because it was a day game. This is great that we don't have to, we can watch a baseball game instead of, doing homework or whatever, and watch Sandy Koufax blow away the Minnesota Twins on nothing but fastballs the last couple innings of that game. And then the next memory I have is Carl Yastrzemski. And I've never, to this day, seen a guy carry a team on his back the way Yaz did in the final 2 weeks of the 67 season. It was epic. And he had a great World Series as well, but they ended up losing in 7 games to the Cardinals. But that guy could do no wrong in Boston. So anybody named Yastrzemski coming back and hitting a home run, that's pretty good stuff.
Yeah, I actually heard John Miller talking about how the Red Sox in 1966 were in ninth place the year before. Yep. And then in 67, the impossible dream season, they go on and make it to the World Series. They don't win, but, the Triple Crown season for Yaz. And everybody always remembers, too, the way Yaz would play the ball off the Green Monster, which was never and still is not an easy task for a left fielder.
No, that was passing the torch from Ted Williams to Carl Yastrzemski, by the way, in Boston. So he had that to live up to. Wasn't quite the hitter Ted was, but was a very good defender. And, yeah, nobody played that left field wall better than he did. And it's great that he's still around and can tell all these stories. And I guess he was on radio in San Francisco a couple days ago, and that was a good get. This guy is definitely a Hall of Famer. And, he's one of these guys that would put up occasional spectacular seasons like the Triple Crown season, but most of the time he was just steady and dependable. And, this is a guy that, Boston baseball fans are hard to please, but he's near to their hearts.
I'll tell you, and playing at Fenway too, as a fan going to Fenway or Wrigley Field, those two to me, it's a magical experience. I know for some of the media members, I don't think it's so great all the time, especially when you go in the cramped clubhouses and all that with those old stadiums. But as a fan, when you go there, it takes you back. And I love that. I just hope that Fenway and Wrigley are around forever.
Well, they better be around forever, because I haven't gone there yet, either of those parks.
You got to
go. Damn it, I've got to make it. I've got to make it before they tear those things down. As much as I've spent watching baseball and covering baseball, it's most of the games have been in San Francisco, which is great. It's one of the best ballparks in baseball. But haven't been to those other places and have regretted that. And so that's on the bucket list for sure.
Here's my Fenway story. So when I graduated college, I went on a cross-country trip, and we decided to go to every ballpark that we could possibly go to on this trip. And we finished up on the East Coast, and we get to Boston, and we could not find a hotel to stay in, right? So we ended up sleeping in the car. And I remember my memory is that my friend, he was sleeping on the roof of the car, and I woke up, and I just saw his feet, his bare feet. And that was the morning that we're going to go to Fenway that day. So we go to Fenway, no showers, no change of clothes, nothing. Just go. We go to Fenway Park. I don't remember anything about the game, but I just remember that we were just, you know, dirty and disgusting, but we got to see Fenway.
Well, I hope it wasn't a packed house that day.
Yeah, feel bad for those other fans.
And put some distance between yourself and the other fans. And I imagine waking up, you thought maybe you hit a guy. maybe you hit a pedestrian and he ended up on the roof of your car.
Exactly. Like, what is this scene right here? Is this a dream or a nightmare? Man.
those are some dedicated fans right there. That's a great story. And all those East Coast ballparks, the only one I've been to is Camden Yards. Okay, so that's another thing I got to do. I've been on the West Coast, you know, which is obviously the best coast, as we all know. But I haven't been to a lot of these ballparks in baseball. And, you know, here I am doing a podcast talking about baseball, and I haven't even been to a lot of these places. So shame on me. I have been to Sam Lynn Ballpark in Bakersfield.
Oh, man. Yeah. Oh.
That's minor leagues right there. That's the whole minor league experience. The rickety wooden stands, the sun setting behind the center field fence.
Right.
No ballpark in America has that, I don't think.
No.
And they had to build this giant green screen, right, in center field, which wasn't terribly deep anyway, so they had to build that high screen to shield from the sun for those 7:45 starts in the summertime.
Yeah. Well, my quick story about Sam Lynn Ballpark, when I was with Rancho Cucamonga as their announcer, we went there to play at the time Bakersfield. I think they were the Dodgers affiliate at the time. And it was 100 degrees, of course, in the middle of the summer in Bakersfield. And the air conditioning wasn't working. And it wasn't working on my side of the press box. The other side, it was working fine. But it wasn't working on my side, and they would not allow me to open the window because it was going to mess up the rest of the air conditioning. So I was just sweating. Sweltering. And I had this thermometer. I was kind of funny. Back in those days, I would bring this thermometer with me. I always wanted to know the official game time temperature. And this is before apps, of course. So I'd bring this thermometer. It was pinned, Ray, at past like 125. It was pinned. So, I mean, during the game, I was just delirious. I mean, I was saying the silliest things because I just completely lost my mind. It was just so hot.
Well, Rancho Cucamonga was almost down an announcer. Man, you could have passed out.
Exactly.
That's dangerous. And oh, by the way, if they wouldn't let you run the AC and you have to go to the hospital, I smell a lawsuit.
Yeah, that could have worked out pretty well for me. You're right.
Right. You help your 401k a little bit. But, man, that's minor league, man. I'll say this much. That's the first place I saw Ken Griffey Jr. play. Were the San Bernardino Spirits when he was 18 or 19 years old.
Oh, wow.
And first place I saw Mike Piazza play. And he had a home run over the Marlboro Man. And I think if you hit the Marlboro Man, if somebody hit that with a home run, there was some prize that went to the fans. So they were a little disappointed because they thought the ball was going to hit the Marlboro Man, at least in the head, but it cleared out there in left field. Over him, it must have been about a 450-foot shot, and that was the year. That was the breakout year for Mike Piazza on the way to a Hall of Fame career.
Yeah, I mean, that's something when you see somebody before they become that great player. You know, I remember seeing Barry Bonds in college at Arizona State, or even somebody, you know, like that I never thought would really make it in Craig Counsell. He was on a team that I covered in Bend, Oregon, and he ends up being a longtime major leaguer and now managing the Cubs after being with the Brewers. So you don't know. You know, sometimes you look at a guy in A-ball and you just don't know that he's going to be that good.
No. And you look at their stats and they're not flashy, but they've got something that the scouts and the coaches like, and it's only seeing a player day to day and what they do that lets you know that. You know, I remember going to, when I was working in Salt Lake City, going to Dirks Field, which may still be there, and the starting lineup for the Salt Lake Gulls in 1984 had Alvin Davis, who went on to be Rookie of the Year for the Seattle Mariners,
right?
Harold Reynolds at second, Danny Tartabull at third, Danny Tartabull at shortstop. Danny Tartabull played shortstop for a while in the minors, and Jim Presley at third. All of them had major league careers. Dave Valley, behind the plate, had a major league career. And then Mickey Brantley, who's, I think it's his son, Michael, who's had a nice major league career, played with the Astros and so forth. A fellow named John Moses played center field, and the right fielder named Tito Nanny, who did not make it to the major leagues. But 8 out of 9 played in the major leagues. That's pretty good.
Danny Tartable, who had an appearance in Seinfeld, I remember.
That's right. So this podcast is going all over the place right now.
All right, so I wanted to talk also about analysts because, you know, we get to see some different analysts on the road these days with the Giants since Kruk and Kipe are not going on, you know, a lot of the road trips these days. And they're kind of mixing and matching. I have to say that I'd like to see a little more on the road of Sean Estes. Seems like they have him more in the studio, but I just think he's so good. And I'd really like to see George Kontos on some games. I don't know if he's been pushing for that at all, but I just think he'd be great on some of the games. It's great to see some of the former Giants that are in there, you know, working as analysts, you know, Javi Lopez, Hunter Pence. But I just really think Estes has come a long way as far as being a super prepared professional analyst. He's really one of my favorites. What do you think?
Well, and it's funny because I didn't think that at all when he started out. You know, he just sounded like an ex-ball player who was just doing this just to do it, but right. He has really clearly he's worked on it, and he's gotten much, much better. I've always liked Javi Lopez. I think that he if he really desired it could do it for a long time, but I think probably Estes is the best one. I like Hunter Pence for just for his personality, but he brings a lot to the booth. Dallas Braden, who does the A's games, he's not cookie cutter. That's what I like about him. He's definitely out there sometimes, but right. And back in the day, I liked the fellow for the Angels, Rex Hudler.
Oh, he was funny, wasn't he?
Yeah. He had some crazy stories. Mark Grant down in San Diego is real good.
Oh, he's funny, really funny.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of games with him, so. You know, those are the guys that come to mind. I remember back when Hank Greenwald was doing the games, and Phil Stone was the number two broadcaster, but sometimes I think they'd team up. And so I remember one time driving up to the Bay Area, and Phil Stone was talking about a pitcher who was having a rough day, and then the Giants were committing errors behind him as well, and it was just getting out of hand. And Phil Stone said something like, well, that's like you get run over by a car and the driver gets out and comes back and takes your wallet. and Hank Greenwald goes, well, I've never experienced that, Phil, but I'll take your word for it.
Exactly. Yeah. Hank had that dry wit. I really liked him. And the thing is too, is that he wasn't going to be phony about anything. I really liked that.
Right.
You know, he was real. That's what I always look for in any announcer. I mean, you know, when I think about NBA announcer, Stan Van Gundy is really my favorite because of that fact that he doesn't hold back. He's going to tell you exactly what he thinks.
Yeah. Very, very unvarnished. My favorite was Hank Greenwald doing live commercial reads. All right. Say goodbye to your taco sauce and say hello to La Victoria. So if you ever wanted to talk to taco sauce, now you got something to say.
And he, you know what else about Hank is that he never held back on his love of Candlestick Park. Tongue in cheek here. Yeah, because, I mean, man, that ballpark, it was fun for a lot of us to go to, but, you know, the wind and the cold and everything about it made it tough for, you know, visiting players and, I mean, even announcers, I guess, just really didn't like it.
Oh no, I've been there for games back in the 80s and 90s. I went to a doubleheader, Dodger-Giant doubleheader on a Sunday. This is in July, mind you, in the pennant race. I want to say 1983. And there was a bench and clearing incident. And I think this is when Frank Robinson was manager. Had something to do with Steve Howe and Frank going to his nose, put it that way. And Tommy Lasorda took exception to that.
Right.
Bench and clearing incident. It was crazy day. They split the doubleheader. There were 50,000 fans there. The weather was beautiful until about 4 o'clock. And then the fog rolled in. I went back the next night to see them play the Atlanta Braves, who were the first place team in the division at that time. And it was about 50 degrees and foggy. And there were about 8,000 fans there. <You know? laughs> I think there were more batteries chucked that night when there were actual people. All right. But that was Candlestick. And I liked it because it was that kind of crazy uniqueness. It was kind of experience you didn't really have anywhere else in the middle of the summer. But, you know, it was a dump, but it was our dump.
Exactly.
That's the way fans looked at it.
Oh, yeah, and those 8,000 fans would be rabid fans. I mean, that's the thing about going to Candlestick when I was in high school. You know, I had just gotten my driver's license, so I'd go up there as much as I possibly could. And I mean, I think the first game I went to that was a night game, I did not have a winter jacket on. I didn't bring my ski jacket, and boy, did I ever regret that. I think every game I went to after that, I brought a down jacket because it was always freezing, and then the wind would be whipping up, the hot dog wrappers would be flying around, and, you know, they didn't really need to chill the beer because, you know, it was already cold. It was so cold outside that, you know, it's air chilled, basically.
I remember talking to a fan going to that Braves game on a Monday night, and I was right behind home plate because it was easy to get a seat. And so the wind's whipping around pretty good there. I'm pretty well layered up, but I'm a little bit shivering. And I said to a fan behind me, I said, "Yeah, I'm getting the full Candlestick experience tonight." And he says, "You got to dress like you're going to the Himalayas." I said, yeah, that's a pro tip. That's a pro tip right there.
Coming up, we'll talk a little golf when the Sports Virus podcast continues.
When it's time for new tires, you want the lowest prices and the best service, don't you? Well, Kane's Tire in San Rafael has you covered on both. Kane's has the lowest prices in Marin County, and they provide the warm and welcoming service that you can only receive from a family-run business. Voted best of Marin for 35 years in a row, Kane's prices beat Costco's prices every time. Kane's Tire, 1531 4th Street in San Rafael. Give them a call at 415-453-2942. That's 415-453-2942 for Kane's Tire.
Live in San Francisco and love to play golf? Visit TPC Harding Park and purchase your 2-year resident card, giving you immediate savings on golf and other programs at the park. Cut your green fees in half by purchasing your card today. Visit www.tpc.com/Harding Park for more information. All right, before we finish up, Ray, I wanted to get a little golf talk in here because what we've been witnessing with Scottie Scheffler has just been incredible. I mean, this guy has been dominating, you know, winning the Masters, winning the Players' Championship. I think that was only the second time that that's ever been done. I think he's won 4 of his last 5 tournaments, and now, you know, his wife being pregnant, he may end up skipping one of them coming up here. I believe it's the it might be the one in Charlotte that he may or may not play. But then you got the PGA Championship coming up. This guy is so locked in right now. Other than Tiger Woods, I mean, have we seen a guy like that in recent years that has been so locked in where, you know, all the other golfers are wondering if they can beat him?
Yeah. For brief periods, we've seen that with several players, but not for this extended period going on, what, a year now?
Yeah.
Where he's always at the top of the leaderboard. If he's not leading, he's lurking. And it's starting to have an effect on the other golfers. I mean, there is an intimidation factor there that we have not seen since Tiger. Not to say it's at the same level, but he's playing the game at a level that's pretty close to where Tiger was when he was at his best, where all facets of the game are working. I think with him, you know, if the putter goes astray, that's probably the problem for him from time to time. But he's been pretty well locked in that department. And when he's putting pretty well, he's unbeatable. That's the level he's at right now, and the other players know it, and you can tell. I mean, right now it's Scottie Scheffler, and it's the rest of the golf world. And, you know, maybe that's what you need, this kind of attraction. I mean, he's not a flamboyant personality or anything like that. He's just a good guy who's playing at a really, really high level. But you need something like that for people to talk about the game right now because the ratings are plummeting. The professional golf world is fragmented with the LIV Tour and the people going to take, you know, the big payouts there. And I have a definite opinion about that. I've been on Rory McIlroy's side on this the whole time.
Me too, yeah.
You know, listen, if somebody puts a stack of $300 million in front of me like they did to John Rahm, it's hard to turn it down if you can give your family and generations to come security. generational wealth, but it's also blood money in my mind. So that makes it kind of hard. And there are guys making tens of millions on the PGA Tour, but that's a decision every individual golfer has to make. And the ones who made the decision to go with a LIV Tour, I got nothing to do with them. I've got no time for them anymore. So I'm looking at the guys on the PGA Tour, and maybe someday they'll come to an agreement on this. But it sounds like Saudi Arabia is trying to buy up professional sports, whether it be soccer, golf, or whatever. And I don't know if I want to be in that kind of a world as a sports fan. But in the meantime, you still have the PGA Tour that's kind of scuffling. Here's a guy who's come along and is going to be dominant. And so that's something to watch, at least when the major tournaments come up. Can this guy do it again? And the way he's going now, he's got to be the favorite for all the majors. He's got a game that can play on every golf course, and he's got the demeanor as well, and he seems to have the right mental approach. So it's going to be fascinating to watch as we go through the next three majors. And, oh, by the way, Tiger just got a special exemption for the U.S. Open. He actually would have had to qualify after 2023, believe it or not.
Oh, man.
But I know. The dude has won 9 USGA events. Right. I think that should earn you a special exemption, and it did. And so he's going to play at Pinehurst. I guess that comes up in June.
Yeah, but, that's going to be great.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's what the sport needs as well, even if it's a Tiger who's pretty much near the end as a competitive player. You know, so in the meantime, I think it's good that you have a player like this who's doing some historic things. We love to see greatness, and I think we're seeing it right now with this guy, Scottie Scheffler. And it's hard to believe he's only like 27, 28. He looks like he's 37 or 38.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he looks old for his age, but the game is in his prime.
Yeah, a couple things that are really amazing about him to me, Ray, because, you know, both of us, we love playing the game of golf, and it's so hard to go through a round and not make any mistakes, and it seems like he just doesn't make many. And when you watch his swing, it's so unconventional as far as his footwork, because he's moving his feet. I mean, that's basically, they tell you not to do that, but he's moving his feet, and his left ankle seems to take the brunt of everything. And so, it seems like he's just really flexible in that area. Otherwise, he'd be injuring his ankle.
Yeah. Oh, I still worry about that down the road. But it seems to work with him for a player of his size and his frame. And it's a swing that, you know, it's, Mike Kruko would call it a yuckadoo swing. I mean, he gets everything out of it. But, you know, although he's moving his feet, he is in balance. And he's like a metronome when it comes to ball striking. So he's found what's right for him and his body type. And that's the holy grail that every player is looking for. So it doesn't mean that if I tried Scottie Scheffler's swing, it would work out for me. It would be hilarious, maybe, but it probably wouldn't work out for me. I mean, I'm a little bit older, and I have to come up with a swing that's a little bit more dependable, and then I'm going to sacrifice yardage. But for him, at his level, right now, it's a perfect match.
And I thought JT Poston said it all with this quote that I read. He said, "Take some time off, Scotty. Give the rest of us a shot." You know, because the impending birth of his baby with his wife Meredith. So that's a player. Just tell him, hey, take some time off.
By all means, go have more babies.
Yeah, yeah, pretty tough.
Give us a break. You know, and the thing is, he's well liked by the other players as well. I don't think that was the case with Tiger when he was at his peak. And I don't think he cared. He didn't really care about being liked. He had his friends, but he wasn't trying to win a popularity contest. He was trying to beat everybody, and he did it for a long, long time. And I think as time has gone on, he's mellowed a little bit. He's become much more approachable, not only to fellow players, but to fans as well. And that's part of his evolution. Maybe he had to be humbled a little bit. It seems to me Scottie Scheffler's got some humility about him. But he's also got that attitude that you're not going to beat me. And it's an interesting combination.
Absolutely. All right, Ray. Well, thanks a lot. We'll talk in a couple more weeks. The Giants with this long road trip. We'll see how they fare on that. Get through Boston, Philadelphia, and then Colorado. So, hopefully they start playing a little bit better than they have.
Well, just hang around 500. And, you know, like I said in the last podcast, you know, you got to wait till May to really judge a lot of these teams. And I think as we get deeper into May, we'll have a real good idea what this team is about. And maybe Blake Snell comes back and gives them some help. But they better not dig a deeper hole than where they are now, that's for sure.
All right, Ray, we'll talk in a couple of weeks.
All right, sounds good, Joe.
That's Ray Woodson. I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to the Sports Virus Podcast on the Believe Podcast Network.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.